Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. We have an incredible ghost story for you today from Shamir in Nevada. It's so good, it's sure to curl your toes.
Wow!
Yeah, and if it doesn't, I'd have your toes checked.
Wow.
Also, we head out west with Matt Dillon for a story about a man who invents a device that converts dimes to dollars.
Amazing!
But before we get to any of that, here is this week's 5-Minute Mystery.
Another 5-Minute Mystery.
This 5-Minute Mystery is being brought to you by Ron's Amazing Stories. We play stories so you don't have to. If it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, you'll hear it on Ron's Amazing Stories. So why go anywhere else when you have what you need right here at Ron's Amazing Stories?
Hello, Emily.
Carl, it's you.
It's reassuring to see that you haven't forgotten me, my dear.
Where have you been all these years, Carl?
Frankly, Emily, I've been trying to lose the memory of our 10 years of marriage. But I must admit, I haven't succeeded.
Go away. Leave this house. This time, never come back.
I have no intentions of returning after this visit, my dear wife. You see, I'm going to kill you.
You're mad.
I really can't resist the situation. It has all the elements. A woman alone in a house in the country, a summer storm, a perfect motive, and an ingenious alibi.
Stay away from me, Carl. Don't touch me!
Don't run away, Emily. Come here.
You must have had quite a ride here in the storm.
Yes, Inspector, but I wanted to report my wife's death as quickly as possible.
I understand you've been away several years.
My wife and I separated 10 years ago.
How'd you happen to come back?
Well, that's rather a strange story, Inspector. It seems that my wife is quite frightened of doctors and refuses to consult them. About 5 days ago, I received a letter from her that she felt she was dying. Well, my wife has always been a strange sort of woman. I hesitate to say it so bluntly, but I'm certain you're aware of the reputation she had here in the village.
No disrespect intended, of course, but she was known as being slightly eccentric.
Yes. By the way, when can you come out to the house to write a report on the suicide?
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to wait till the storm subsides a bit, but I realize you want this whole embarrassing affair disposed of as quickly as possible, so if you'll allow me to have the details, I can begin my report.
Good. Well, I arrived at the house about 8 o'clock tonight. I found my wife in her bedroom. She was bleeding from several small wounds. She told me that they were self-inflicted.
Didn't you stop the bleeding?
Yes, but she only laughed and said there was nothing I could do. You see, she revealed to me that she suffered from hemophilia. It would be impossible to stop the flow of blood. There were too many wounds.
The storm seems to be letting up. I think we'll be able to make it to the house now. I must warn you that anything you say will be used against you in your trial. I'm accusing you of the murder of your wife.
What flaw did the inspector find in Carl's story? In just a moment, we'll know, but first...
This one has some flaws. Hey, but the sound effects were good. Thunder and everything. However, the acting in the story, well, let's just say this one had some flaws. We'll talk about the biggest one after the story. For now, let's head back, shall we, for the rest of the tale. Remember, Ron's Amazing Stories and all that other stuff.
And now, back to our story.
Carl, you murdered your wife, and with one of the most gruesome methods I've ever encountered. Your story stamped itself as a lie when you told me your wife said she suffered from hemophilia. For your information, my friend, women never suffer from the affliction of hemophilia. They may transmit it to male members of their family by means of heredity, but they themselves are never affected by it. The blood on your hands won't wash off easily.
Okay, you remember when I said this one had flaws? It turns out that females can also have hemophilia, but it is rare. In such cases, both X chromosomes are affected, or one is affected and the other is missing or inactive. In these females, bleeding symptoms may happen. This story was brought to you by Ron's Amazing Stories. We play stories so you don't have to. I have to say that my brother is in the hospital. Now, I don't get to see him very much. He lives in New Mexico and I live in Washington. He's an avid listener to the podcast and has even shared a story or two. I want very much to be there for him, but for now, emails and phone calls will have to do. I won't tell you the details of his ailment, but I would ask for your thoughts and prayers for him. He's a good man who's dedicated his life in God's service and needs our support now. His name is James and he is in the hospital doing well. However, he is facing major life-changing surgery. Thank you for your thoughts and allowing me this moment. This week's OTR tale is dedicated to my brother. It comes from the Best Western of the golden age of radio, Gunsmoke. Now, the show was on the radio for 9 years, and the television series ran for 20 seasons. If you add it all up, there's over 1,000 episodes for us to enjoy today. How about that? Our story takes us into the world of the Flim Flam artist and two unsuspecting cowboys. It's called The Fabulous Silver Extender. This one was written by one of the regular cast members, Victor Herbert Perrin, and it first aired on June 5th of 1960.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, the story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Saddled up and out front, Mr. Dillon.
All right, Chester. I should be back late Wednesday or early Thursday.
Well, don't you worry about nothing.
I think it should be pretty quiet with the prisoner gone. Might even have time to do a little housekeeping around here for a change.
Well, now, I swept this place out from front to back just yesterday.
I know. Now, maybe you ought to use that mop and bucket standing out back before Washington declares them surplus equipment.
Now, Mr. Dillon.
Never mind, Chester. All right, come on, Skaglow. We got to get started.
I ain't no hurry.
Maybe you're not, but I am. I promised the sheriff in Haves City I'd have you there by noon tomorrow. All right, let's go. Mount up.
Ain't you going to take the cuffs off?
Uh-huh. At noon tomorrow. Now get up in that saddle. And Chester.
Yes, sir?
Don't take things too easy, huh?
Oh, yes, sir. No, sir, I won't.
All right.
Bye, Mr. Dillon.
Was that the marshal just rode off?
Yes, it was.
Oh, what time will he be back?
What time? Well, if you'd ask me what day, it'd be a better question.
This is serious, young man. How long will the marshal be out of town?
Well, I expect him back of a Wednesday or Thursday.
Oh, I'll probably be dead by then.
Dead? Look, mister, I'm Mr. Jones' assistant, and if you're in trouble...
Are you good with a gun?
Well, sure. Oh, I may not be as good as Mr. Jones, but I do all right.
I'd sure feel better telling all this to the marshal.
Oh, what? You ain't told me nothing yet.
I have to trust you. Can we talk inside?
Well, of course. You can come on in. Now, what's this about?
Here's my card.
Professor Albert Cramston. Doctor of M-E-T-A-L...
Metallurgical Research.
Oh. Well, that sounds pretty important, but it don't sound very dangerous.
Well, believe me, son, it is dangerous if the syndicate has put a price on your head.
Syndicate?
The silver syndicate in San Francisco. You know, all those millionaire fellows who own the mines.
Oh, them fellows. Well, why should they want you dead?
I don't want to tell you too much because it'd be dangerous information for you to have, but I will tell you this. They've hired 8 killers to track me down, and the one who catches up with me gets $10,000 for the job.
Well, is any of them 8 men in Dodge now?
I don't know. I don't know who they are or what they look like. I just know they mean to get me.
Well, there ain't anything I can do, Professor.
Thank you, son. And I just want to say, keep your gun close by, because the welfare of your country and mine may be resting in your hands.
Delmar, Wilbert. Somehow I never thought I'd see you two drinking at the same table.
Sit down, Miss Kitty. Sure. Join us for a farewell drink.
I'd love to, but only if you'll let the Long Branch stand this round. Sam,
yeah.
2 whiskeys, 1 beer.
Right away, Miss Kitty.
I understand Mr. Durgan bought out your shop, Wilbert.
That's right, for $1,500.
And you're leaving Dodge in the morning?
You're right again for San Francisco. And to be perfectly honest, about the only thing I'll miss is dropping in here to the Long Branch.
Here's drinks, Miss Kitty.
Thanks, Sam.
Miss Kitty.
Hmm?
See that little old fellow by the bar there? The stovepipe hat?
The kind of fussy-looking little man?
Yeah.
What about him?
He keeps borrowing dimes from the customers.
Sam, you know we don't allow panhandling in here.
Oh, but he pays them back.
What?
Yeah, 3 times now I've seen him. He borrows a dime, he leaves, comes back, buys a drink with a silver dollar, takes his chains, and pays back the dime.
Well, you worry about it, Sam. I'm going upstairs for a while. I got some bills to go over. Excuse me, boy.
Sure, Miss Kitty, sure.
And if I don't see you before you leave, Wilbert, good luck.
Well, thank you, Miss Kitty. Did you hear what Sam said about that little fella?
Yeah.
Sure sounds crazy. Why would anybody do that?
I think we're going to find out.
Oh, excuse me, gentlemen. I wonder if either of you would be so kind as to lend me a 10-cent piece.
Why, I think that could be arranged, don't you, Wilbert?
Yeah, I think so. Here you are.
Oh, thank you. I'll return it shortly.
I wonder where that little geezer's going. I don't know. Well, Sam said he keeps coming back with a silver dollar. Maybe we ought to follow him. Maybe we ought to.
Janet, I'm worried.
About the church supper, Mother?
I promised I'd make the chicken pies, but the way I felt lately with headache and muscular aches and pains, I don't feel up to it.
I don't wonder with that discomfort. Better do something about it.
But what?
Try Doane's pills.
Good advice. That's Doane's pills, an analgesic and mild diuretic to the kidneys. Nagging backache, also headache, dizziness, and muscular aches and pains, may come on with overexertion, emotional upsets, or everyday stress and strain. Doane's pain-relieving action is often the answer, and they also offer mild diuretic action through the kidneys. So if nagging backache is making you feel worn out, tired, and miserable, with restless, sleepless nights, don't wait. Try Doane's pills, used successfully by millions for over 60 years. See if they don't bring you the same welcome relief. Get Doane's pills today. To save money, buy Doane's big economy size.
That him?
Yeah. Now, Wes, don't follow too close. Wait.
Where's he going?
Well, he's going in my shop.
Your shop? Ain't it locked?
Well, what for? There's nothing in there. I hauled every last speck over to your place. My own stuff's already in my wagon.
What you suppose he's doing in there?
Well, I'll go in and ask him.
No, wait. Let's sneak up on him. He might find out something.
I didn't board up the side window between the buildings. Maybe we can see him through there.
Got a lantern. You suppose he's planning to sleep in there?
I don't know. What's that thing on the back counter? I didn't leave nothing like that.
Take your cover off. Looks like some kind of machine. There's something crooked here, and we're going to get us a reward. Let's get the front door grabbing when it comes out.
You get on that side, and I'll stay here and we'll wait for him to come out.
That's Chester. We got to get rid of him.
Why?
Because if he's in on it, there won't be no reward.
Oh, you know what? That Dergerman got me.
Chester?
Yep, Chester, just taking a last look at the old shop.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're leaving town tomorrow. Well, I sure do wish you luck, Wilbert.
Thanks, Chester.
Well, Chester, I suppose you have to get on with your rounds, being a peace officer and all.
Things is kindly quiet tonight, so mostly what I'm doing is getting me a little exercise before I go to bed.
Well, good night, Chester.
Good night.
Good night, Chester.
When we grab this fella, try to cover his mouth so he can't yell.
He's coming. Get ready.
Hold him, Gatsby. Hold him.
I got him. Get him back into the shop.
All right. Grab this off. We got him, Chester. Come on in.
You got who?
And we get the reward.
Here, that's Professor Cramson. Let him go, Wilbur.
Don't you do it, Wilbur, till he agrees about the reward.
If there's a reward, you can have it. Let him go. His face is turning blue.
You said you'd protect me. Now, you shoot him. You shoot him.
Whose side are you on, Chester?
Now, look, Professor, these two fellas ain't killers. And they ain't from that syndicate thing. They're just Mr. Dergum and Mr. Gatsby.
Oh, well, that's certainly a relief.
Well, what about him? Who's he?
Professor Albert Cramson, gentleman, late of San Francisco.
Pleased
to make your acquaintance.
Howdy. Howdy. We were watching through the window there. Well, you sure looked suspicious to us.
Oh, well, I can certainly understand that. And since you've stumbled onto a part of my secret, I guess you're entitled to know the rest if you want to. Well,
I sure do.
Me too.
I'm kind of curious about this myself.
But first, I have to ask you, are all of you natural-born citizens of the USA?
Well, of course.
And none of you are in the employ of a foreign government?
You mean like Europe or France or one of them towns?
That's what I mean. What, now, that's silly.
Well, I won't even have nothing to do with foreigners.
Me neither.
Well, I've got to ask those questions. And one more. If the good of our duly constituted government depended on your keeping a secret, would you die instead of revealing it?
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Now, I want you to watch this carefully, gentlemen, so you'll be convinced in your own minds of the importance of this little device. I'll explain it to you step by step as I go along, and if you have any questions, don't hesitate. You just speak right up.
Well, and this is also mysterious. Like, what does that thing do?
You won't believe your eyes, Mr. Proudfoot. Would one of you contribute a dime to this demonstration?
I got one. I got one.
Right. I got a dime here somewhere.
I'll take all three of them, and then you'll each have a permanent memento. A reminder that you were among the first to witness the results of my discovery. I'll use your dime first, Mr. Proudfoot.
Chester.
All right, Chester. Now, put the dime in this funnel here at the top. Now, you count to three slowly.
One. Two. Three.
Fine. Now, I give the crank four complete turns. Turn this little spigot to admit three drops of mercury, that's quicksilver, and turn the crank one more time. And there we are. Now, you see that lever there, Chester, on the bottom toward the front?
Yes, sir. What am I?
Oh, reach over and pull it.
Well, now, I ain't sure.
No, we won't let you.
Just pull it.
Do it.
Well, I know, but...
No.
Well, I didn't clear. That's a silver dollar.
It sure is. I told you, you wouldn't believe it. You can take that cartwheel to the bank tomorrow, and they'll tell you it's real.
Oh, it's real enough, but I...
But how is it done? It's really very simple once you understand the physical principle. It has to do with what I call induced porosity.
Huh?
Once you make that dime porous, like a sponge, all you have to do is introduce a little quicksilver to fill in the holes, and the chemical process of expansion is automatic.
Well, that's clear enough.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, but why do you have to use dime?
I'm glad you asked that question. You see, the ratio of the weight of one dime to three drops of mercury produces an expansion of exactly 10.
Well...
You follow me? That means this particular formula in this machine extends silver in size and weight in multiples of 10.
Oh.
So, the logical raw material is the little thin dime. Why, if you used half dollars or even quarters, the end product would be clumsy, large, and bulky.
Of course.
Besides, who ever heard of a $5 silver piece? Why, a couple of those would weigh you down like a pack.
Oh, you're sure right there.
No, you couldn't have any bigger than a dollar.
Why, anybody can see that.
Now, anything else you don't understand?
Oh, no.
How about you, fellow?
No, it's real clear to me.
Me too, but...
But what?
I would like to see that thing work again.
So would I.
All right. But this time, you turn the crank, Mr. Gatsby.
Four times?
Yes, but not till I tell you to. You ready?
Yep.
All right, I put in the dime. One, two, three. Now.
What?
Now, turn it, turn it.
Oh.
That's right. Now, three drops of quicksilver. There.
And I turn the crank once more.
Right. Well, you boys catch on fast.
Is it ready now?
It should be. Pull the lever.
I'll be doggone. I did it.
Well, that sure is surprising.
It sure is. It sure is.
Can I try it? Now, I haven't had a turn. Can I try the whole thing?
Well, I'd like to accommodate you, but I think I'd better cover it up and put it away before some untrustworthy person finds out what we're doing in here.
Well, why don't you come have a drink with us,
why,
Professor?
Yeah, we'd be proud to have you at our table.
Well, that's very kind of you, gentlemen, but I do have a few little things I must do. If I finish in time, I may join you at the Long Branch.
Well, whatever you say.
Anyway, a pleasure meeting you.
Yes, it was.
Good night, sir.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
Good night.
And the pleasure was all mine.
Hi, this is Dennis James. Say, remember way back when this melody was popular? There's something very special about a long-time favorite, isn't there? Well, folks feel the same way about one of Kellogg's favorites, Kellogg's All Bran. Going on 41 years now, it's been America's most popular good food way to fight irregularity from lack of bulk. Because it's whole bran, Kellogg's All Bran gentles away irregularity safely and reliably. And because it's deep toasted for extra crispness, it never gets mushy in milk. There's only one All Bran, Kellogg's All Bran. That's A-double-L-hyphen-B-R-A-N. Kellogg's All Bran.
I just can't get over it.
Neither can I.
You know, if a fella could just own one of them machines.
Or maybe even rent it for just a month.
Well, think all the good you could do.
Yeah,
well. You could build churches
and help the poor people.
It sure would be wonderful.
And after you did all those things, you could even take a little for yourself.
Well, there's no reason not to.
No.
If a fella didn't get greedy,
that's right. No.
You suppose he would sell it?
Oh, I doubt that. I couldn't do nothing about it even if he would.
You don't suppose he'd consider $1,500.
$15,000 would be more like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think so.
Oh, gentlemen, I can't tell you how glad I am that you're still here.
What's the matter?
Something's come up. May I sit down, please?
Of course. Go right ahead.
What's come up?
I just got word that they know where I am.
The Silver Syndicate?
The Silver Syndicate. And their killers are closing in.
How many are they?
I don't know. Could be just one. Could be all of them.
I sure do wish Mr. Dillon was here.
But he isn't. So I've had to come to a decision. I'm taking the train east early tomorrow, 8 o'clock. But I need your help, all of you.
What do you want us to do?
I want you gentlemen to destroy the Silver Extender.
Destroy it?
You mean bust
it? I mean blow it to bits. So there isn't the slightest chance of anyone piecing it together and figuring out how it was made.
That would be a terrible thing.
It sure would.
Just a minute, gentlemen. I understand your concern, but it's not quite as bad as it sounds.
How's that?
Well, if I get to Washington alive, I can build another. Mm. If I don't, not only will I be dead, but my discovery will be lost to the government.
I begin to see what you mean.
If you can make up another, and when you get there, you'd be an awful lot safer traveling without this one.
Then I can count on your help.
Oh, sure. In what way?
Well, I've told you I want to destroy the machine. But when you're dealing with Washington, you can't do things just like that. No, sir. Now, see if you can understand my problem. Now, let's say you're the government. You know I have this machine. I've told you I'm bringing it to you. Then I show up without it. You ask me where it is, and I say I blew it up. And you say to me, prove it. Prove you didn't sell it to somebody. But I can't prove it. So you convict me of treason, put me up against a wall facing a firing squad. That's the end of Professor Cranston.
Well, that'd be awful.
Why, it sure would, but what can we do?
You can be witnesses.
Witnesses?
If three honest citizens signed an affidavit that they saw the machine blown up, they'd have to believe me. Would you be willing to do that?
Certainly not asking very much.
No, especially since you were so nice about sharing your secret.
Well, I was planning to pull out early tomorrow, but there ain't no reason I can't wait till we're finished witnessing.
Oh, you can wait that.
Now, there's one other thing.
What's that?
Well, I've got it all crated, and only the four of us know where it is, so I'm sure it'll be safe there till morning. Can I count on you?
Of course you can. We'll do it just like you said.
I don't know how to thank you, gentlemen. But when I tell the government what you've done for your country, you can be sure the U.S. Treasury will find some way of rewarding you for your services. Well, I'll be at the Dodge House if any of you need me.
This ought to be far enough from town. Just pull off the trail there and we'll unload it.
All right, Chester.
Yep.
That's good.
You get that tailgate open, Wilbert, and I'll slide the crate back to you.
Now, just a minute. Let me help you, fellas.
That's far enough. You and me can lift it down, Chester.
Oh, yeah. I got the dynamite all bundled in under the seat here.
Yeah. Now, look, we can just pop up one end of this rock and slide the bundles right underneath.
Here.
Yeah. Oh, that should work just fine.
Yeah. Fits real nice and snug, don't it?
If you want to uncoil a roll of fuse, Wilbert, I'll turn the wagon around and drive back down the trail.
All right.
I figured 20 feet of this would give us plenty of time to get out of the way.
Oh, sure. String it out. We'll light it and keep right on moving.
That guess is far enough for a wagon?
Yeah, that's good.
Well, yeah, that's all of it, Chester. You ready to move?
Any time.
Here goes, then. Come on.
I'm coming.
Got plenty of time.
Well, you keep a good hold on them horses.
There's a good 5 feet left before she blows.
Smithereens.
Yep, that did it.
By jing, ain't nobody gonna get the professor's machine now.
Oh, he sure won't.
Well, all I have to do is get back on to Dodge and sign that paper.
Get on up on the wagon, Wilbert. We'll get going.
Coming.
Let's go.
I'll ride alongside you, fellas. We can stop by the office. Professor sure will be happy it all went so good.
Yeah. I sure hated to do it, though. That machine...
Oh, here, somebody,
shooting it up.
You see where that come from?
Up there on that rise. He's gonna...
I'm hit. You fool!
Sir, you get Wilbert into docks. Holler right after him.
You'll never catch him.
Well, I can try. You can get going. I'll meet you in town.
I'm not blaming you, Chester. The professor has taken in people a lot brighter than you are.
Well, if he'd have tried to sell that machine, I would have got suspicious, but he didn't.
Not on a thing like this, people sell themselves. And you can be sure he got through to somebody. Or Gatsby and Durgan wouldn't be laying up in Doc's office with each other's bullets in them.
Well, it all sure went over my head.
Machines like that have been fooling people since the first day men stopped trading buckskins for flour and started using money. And as long as there's a man alive looking for something for nothing, it'll go right on working.
Suppose. Matt?
Yeah, Doc.
If you want to talk to Durgan, you better do it now.
All right. Come on, Chester. What about Gatsby?
He never came out of it. Died a half an hour ago.
No, my.
Yeah, it sure doesn't make much sense, does it?
Few killings do. You, Marshal?
Yeah, that's right.
You're not laughing at me, are you?
No, I'm not laughing. Something you want to tell me?
Not much to tell. The stakes were big, but I lost.
Just what were the stakes?
Didn't Chester tell you?
And he told me about the silver extender. He said you blew that up.
That's what Chester was supposed to think. It's what I was supposed to think. But I knew better.
Then it wasn't in that crate.
Nah, just scrap iron. Gatsby had the machine.
What?
Sure. After we left the Long Branch last night, Gatsby snuck back and made a deal with the professor. Bought that machine with my money. Wouldn't go partners. Use the money I give him and wouldn't go partners. Why, Marshal, 100 men could have got rich with that thing just using it an hour a day. He had to have it all. Couldn't share.
Where is it now?
If I tell you, will you promise to blow it up?
Is that what you want?
That's what I want. It's under the work counter in the back of my store. You know, a thing like that may be all right for the government, but it ain't for the people. The professor should have known that.
And I think maybe he did.
What do you mean?
Nothing. Anything else you want me to know?
That's about all, except about the gunman on the hill that hit Gatsby.
What about him?
I didn't hire him. Gatsby did. To shoot me. He just picked a man with a bad aim. So Gatsby got it in the shoulder. I think that's kind of funny.
Gatsby tell you this?
He did.
When?
Soon as Chester rode off after the gunman, pulled his own gun to do the job himself.
Then you shot him self-defense.
You might say that, yeah, but I'll be honest with you, though, Marshal.
Yeah?
I was planning to kill Gatsby anyway. You won't forget your promise?
No, I am. I'll blow up the machine. You want me to send Doc back in?
No reason to.
Yeah.
So long, Marshal.
So long, Durgan.
Did you tell him, Mr. Dillon?
About the silver extender?
Mm-hmm.
No, Chester, I didn't have the heart.
I don't think I would either.
No. Even when he's wrong, if a man has to die, likes to feel he's died for something. And if he dies for nothing, I don't want to be the one to let him know.
Get the really light refreshment. This is where I talk, hey?
Get the really light refreshment. That's Pepsi-Cola, of course.
I just wanted to say be sociable, Charlie.
Of course, Kay. Be sociable. Have a Pepsi on the road or at home. It always refreshes without filling.
Charlie.
Pick up extra cartons now. Pepsi is so delicious, it goes fast. That's why you should keep plenty of Pepsi on hand.
Maybe I'd better sing.
Be sure to say keep Pepsi handy.
Yes, Charlie. But the song says it sociably.
Be sociable. Look smart. Keep up to date with Pepsi. Drink light, refreshing Pepsi. Stay young and fair and debonair. Be sociable. Have a Pepsi.
What Kay means is, get plenty of Pepsi next time you shop.
Yes.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed in Hollywood by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Vic Perrin, with editorial supervision by John Meston. Featured in the cast were Joseph Kearns, Vic Perrin, Harry Bartell, and Jack Moyle. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. This is George Walsh inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents another story on Gunsmoke.
This is WPT Radio in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Now that's a great story. Did you hear that Vic Perrin wrote that one? During the 1940s and 50s, Perrin was a regular performer on old-time radio, appearing in many shows. His first role came in 1943 when he became the announcer for Free World Theater, directed by Arch Obler. He was a regular guest star on Gunsmoke and indeed wrote our story for today. He appeared in three classic Star Trek episodes. During the first season, he voiced Metron in Arena. Then he appeared on camera as the head of the ruling council on Holka. And finally, he provided the voice of the Nomad Probe in The Changeling. He was, without any doubt, one of the best character actors that ever graced our radio and televisions.
As read by Amazing Stories, read by Amazing People.
This time on As Read By, we have a story sent in by Shamir Dongsuk. I have to apologize if I misspoke your name. I tried to get the pronunciation, and that was the best I could come up with. Shamir lives in Ely, Nevada, and leads a ghost hunting group there. Here is his email sent in via the website. Hello, my name is Shamir, and I have a ghost tale for you. Many people have strange hobbies, and I guess you have to put me on the list. You see, me and my mates go to the many ghost towns of Nevada to hunt and find evidence. Most of the time, we come home tired and empty-handed. There was this one time we came home tired, scared, and with this true ghost story. The only evidence we have are some EBPs, bad pictures, and soiled garments. Fact. There are more ghost towns in Nevada than towns occupied by the living. By that count, it would take you years, if not a lifetime, to explore them all. One of them is the remote town of Berlin. Long before it was occupied by miners in the late 1800s, Berlin was a home to a sharp-toothed reptile who roamed the warm ocean waters that overran Nevada 225 million years ago. In 1897, during the post-dinosaur era, Berlin was founded as a small mining camp with a peak population of 300. The town consisted of a stagecoach station, a stamp mill, a school, and two blacksmith shops. Its downfall began in 1907 when the miners demanded higher wages and were refused. Today, 13 buildings still stand, and my group agree this place is haunted. We set up camp at a nearby campground. Our first night out, while adventurous and fun, was pretty quiet. The second night, we must have woke something up because it was anything but quiet. EVPs, strange noises, and even some missing equipment was the theme. It was that third and final night of hunting that had my team and I running for the hills. I was in what was left of a small home. The north wall was completely gone, and the roof was nothing more than a few crossbeams. I had a recorder, and my partner Barb was sweeping with an EMF detector. We both commented at the same time about a temperature drop. While recording changes, you say your name, the time of day, and then make your statement. That was so the person reviewing the tape can know that it was a team member and also record the information. We made the statements, and then a third voice, as clear as day, says,
"That happens here every night in the spring."
We both looked at each other, and I watched Barb go white. I replied, "Oh, have you lived here long?" Complete silence. It was Barb who spoke next. She said, "My detector is dead." Again, I turned to my friend, and standing next to her was a complete, full-figured gal. She was in all white and was dressed in what best could be described as a nightgown of some sort. "Barb," I began, "you're not alone over there. I just..." She screamed and started to flail about like she was being attacked by wasps. "Get it off," she yelled. I ran over to her, and I noticed that the full-figured gal was running towards her as well. I happened to get a look at her face, and she looked as perplexed as I did. We arrived at Barb to find that a large tarantula was climbing up her leg. I knocked the thing off with my finger and then remembered the ghost. I looked around, and it, was gone. Barb was still whining about the spider, but was calm enough to ask who it was that came to help. I told her, and, well, that was it for Barb. She handed me her detector and went back to camp. I stayed in that building for the next 3 hours and never had anything else happen. After we returned home and reviewed all the data, there was nothing recorded for that entire time. A real shame. We had one more event. Another group was in one of the blacksmith shops. When a team member asked, "Do you want us to leave?" the reply was, "Yes." We thought the reply so cool, we decided to accept the comment and ended the investigation. Wow, Shamir, that is an amazing story. Incredible. Did I understand right? Did the recordings you make all turn out erased, or just no evidence of the full-figured lady? Please let me know on that. Now, I had never heard of Ely, Nevada, so I just had to look it up. It was founded as a stagecoach station along the Pony Express and Central Overland Route. Ely had a mining boom with the discovery of copper in 1906. Most of the stations connecting the First Transcontinental Railroad to these mines have long been removed. However, the railroad to Ely is preserved as a heritage railway by the Nevada Northern Railway. It is known as the Ghost Train of Old Ely. As of the 2010 census, the population of Ely was 4,255. To Shamir, I say, thank you for your story. That is a special one. This podcast. What an amazing story sent in by Shamir. Remember, if you have a story that you want to share, please get it to us. If you need help with getting it written, I'm your guy. Just contact me at ronsamazingstories@gmail.com. If you want to keep up with what's happening on Ron's Amazing Stories, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or sign up for the weekly newsletter. All the links you'll need and access to the blog can be found at ronsamazingstories.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.